Welcome, everyone. We'll get this committee hearing started. So welcome to the Transportation Committee hearing of Wednesday, March 26th, 2025. The time is 3:07 p.m. We are in room 1100 of the Minnesota Senate Building. A quorum is present. As soon as the photo op has concluded, we will invite Senator Herr to the table to present Senate File 2520. Welcome, Senator Herr. Please proceed at your pleasure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This bill, Senate File 2525, is for our K Street and E 7th Street construction.
Senator Herr, I think it's 2520.
Oh, 2520, sorry. 2520. This relates to MnDOT project on Highway 61 as it proceeds through part of Maplewood and into the east side St. Paul. With a densely urban area along two of the major business corridor on the east side. The project is much needed, and the community has worked 5 years with MnDOT on the design phase. And our concern and the reason for this bill is to make it possible for small businesses to survive through the construction. The project is slated for a 6 month in the construction phase in 2025 on RK Street, and similar 6 month time frame in 2026 on East 7th Street. From a single point of this corridor, that 6 month includes 3 months of significant impact to business and 1 month of severe impact. This bill seeks to create a mitigation fund that small businesses, including mom and pops with 25 and fewer employees who depend on revenues from walk-up customer, can apply for some relief. And being that this project involved highway and road construction, that's why it need to come through this committee and pass this committee before we ask for the mediation dollars from DEED through the Job and Economic Development Committee. So I stand by for question, and also have two testify here with me, Mr. Perez Dunning, and
did you need to do the amendments, Senator?
Oh, yeah. At the same time, I also have an amendment A1 to be adopted.
Senator Herr moves the A1 author's amendment. Any questions, members? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion carries. All right, to your testifiers. Mr. Dunning, welcome.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I'm Paris Dunning, Director of the East Side Area Business Association. Our member businesses and organizations on the east side are excited about this MnDOT project, but they're concerned about the impacts of road construction. Road construction's inconvenient and frustrating for drivers, but it's 100 times worse for small businesses that are located on torn up streets and sidewalks. We've talked to businesses who think that maybe the greatest challenge they might ever face is road work in front of their business. We estimate there are 150 smaller brick and mortar businesses that would be eligible for along these corridors, and you'll hear one of their stories next. We've had constructive conversations with MnDOT and with some of you on this committee about how to fund a mitigation, and we understand that transportation funds have to meet a standard for highway purpose. Often we've been in agreement that in the case of Highway 61, the purpose of these highways is clear. They're the lifeblood of our community. They get people to jobs, to school, to businesses they own, to products and services, and to parks and organizations. And that helping businesses survive construction would align with this highway purpose. We ask for any support you can give us as we work to convince your colleagues on the Jobs Committee to fund this. The mitigation fund is designed to help businesses cover expenses, basic expenses, for 1 month so that they can keep the doors open. We know businesses don't expect anyone to come and save them. These are hardworking people who are used to adapting, but the honest truth is they're still recovering from economic shocks due to COVID, supply chain disruption, and inflation. Months of decreasing revenue from construction will be dire for many of them. But this isn't a handout. These businesses pay property taxes and collect sales taxes. They employ many and result in dollars that multiply because they're owned and operated by our own community members. They're revenue generators for the city and the state, and many made their investment in Arcade and East 7th before this construction project was in full view. We need your help, Senators, so these businesses survive to see the new day this project will bring. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Dunning. Please introduce yourself for the record. Welcome to the committee. Proceed.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the Senate Transportation Committee. My name is Marcia Allen. I am a supporter of the Eastsider, entrepreneur in St. Paul, and also the business specialist that has been engaging with all these small businesses. And today I'm going to actually read a really quick letter from one of the business owners singing a Saiyan song. She was supposed to be here, but last minute couldn't be here. Okay. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the Senate Transportation Committee. My name is Xinying Sayasong, and I'm a proud owner of Sun Moon Boba, located at 1440 Arcade Street in St. Paul. I moved my business to Arcade Street to invest in this vibrant community. Sun Moon Boba is a family-owned cafe. My children and I work together daily to operate and manage it. This business represents our family's livelihood and our commitment to serving the community. MnDOT recently informed us that upcoming construction will last up to 6 months. My business is among the first to be impacted. This funding from Bill 2520 is vital because our business depends entirely on walk-up traffic. Construction will directly affect the accessibility of our parking lot on an already busy street. There is no street parking. My greatest fear is that customers will think we are closed and our business will be significantly and our business will significantly decline. Without assistance during construction, the financial impacts could be devastating, not just temporarily, but long after construction ends. Supporting this means helping small family-owned businesses like ours remain open and thrive despite disruptions. Your support will directly protect the economic health of our neighborhood, my family's livelihood, and the community we are in. Thank you.
Thank you, and please convey our thanks to her on our behalf.
Thank you.
Senator Herr, anything further in terms of testimony?
This is all for the testimony.
Oh, there are. Oh. Would anyone else like to testify on Senate File 2520? All right. Committee, questions? Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Senator Herr. I agree with the concept of this. I think we, you know, this does have an impact. I think there's a couple bills floating around. I think I have one of them that's a statewide program. It doesn't target just one specific area, and it's administered through deed, not through nonprofits. So I agree with the concept that we need this because it does have a huge impact on certain communities, but I think I would be more in favor of a statewide program that could be, you know, administered through deed and have them apply these. I know there's going to probably be not a huge general fund target as well, so that would be a little bit of a concern as well of where the money would go, and designating this just for one area when the state has many of these areas would be my concern. Again, I think a statewide program for this would be much more beneficial, so thank you.
Thank you, Senator Jasinski. Anything further, members? So I'll just echo Senator Jasinski's comments. You know, I think this is important to bring this bill forward, and this bill is moving on to jobs should it be received favorably by this committee. But we do need to have a larger conversation about this circumstance. I think Senator Johnson Stewart has a similar bill. Senator Kuhn has a bill that addresses a specific project. I live in Uptown, so it's been terrible. We did manage to receive some funds through the Promise Grant last year, but they've been hard to get out the door. Deed has had a real problem. I don't think $1 has gotten to a business yet.
Wow.
Because Deed has gotten stuck in their bureaucratic whatever they do. So that's been frustrating. So appreciate the comments. All right, anything further, members? With that, Senator Herr, final word.
Just appreciate your support of hearing all this. This is where the mom and pop business are in my district, and you know, I know you have project in the district as well, and this is where I hear first, and so I have to represent my constituents on the East Side St. Paul, but this is needed more for, at the same time also for community with disparities. So thank you for your support, and I'd like to ask for a referral to the Job and Economic Committee.
Great. So Senator Herr moves Senate file number 2520 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Jobs. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Herr.
Thank you.
All right, Senator Carlson. Senator Carlson is here to present on Senate File 1480, Road User Charge, previously known as MBUF, Mileage-Based User Fee, also known as a VMT. So with that, there is an amendment. I see it here.
Yes.
The A1. So, Senator Carlson, would you like to start off with the A1 amendment?
Sure. The A1 amendment is something that we needed to do. Gillis pointed out that the bill, I think rather accidentally, does not put all of the money into the Highway User Trust Fund. So it's something that we can deal with otherwise, but I thought it would be better to get it in coordination with the Constitution before we go any further.
Very good. And if we could persuade you to pull the mic a little closer, that would be awesome. Senator Carlson offers the A1 author's amendment. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say no. Motion carries. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm presenting Senate File 1480, which is a road usage charge for all electric vehicles. It's not for hybrids. It's for only all electric vehicles. And what it does is it imposes a road usage charge for electric vehicles again. And what it relies on is a reporting of the miles that were driven by the owner and a confirmation through the car's electronic system. And then there's an agreement that needs to be entered with the commissioner with one or more account providers to perform the road usage charge management so that that can be reported to the commissioner and the owner can pay the appropriate fee. I don't know, Mr. Chair, if you'd like to go through these stages of the bill here, but I can start out with just account providers and account provider data practices. That's what would probably be one of the issues, is that this does report details about how many miles the person drove, and it does differentiate between driving in Minnesota and driving outside of Minnesota. So one of the things that we had talked about before is how do you account for miles that might be on the odometer, but they're not driven in Minnesota. We also will, have odometer data that the vehicles can report, and the deposit of revenue is again in the Highway User Trust Fund as of the A1 amendment. Then there's reports that are required from the commissioner to report to the commissioner, just details concerning the road usage charge. I think that this is one of the better of the offerings, although it is somewhat, transparent as to where the person is driving and how many miles they might be at, things like that. But these cars are all reporting that now. They're reporting it to their own memory and also to the manufacturer. So it's not a matter that this is something that is put anywhere other than in the already stored data for that car. And one thing I want to mention on the programming that is done, I'm not exactly sure how the formula is going to work as far as assigning miles per gallon a mileage, and then converting it into a miles per gallon. Just for your information, I did try to pull out the sticker for my own electric vehicle, and I have a copy of it, but it's at home, unfortunately. But it does say there's a formula that's right on that, on the window sticker of my electric car, that tells me that it it is assigned 35.5 miles per gallon. So if the automobile manufacturers use a formula like that, they can all report in the same way. I don't know how 35.5 miles per gallon, you know, how appropriate that is for my car, but I think it's reasonably appropriate. I charge my car only at home, so those systems that use a flat fee, I don't think is appropriate, because there's a lot of differences in how many miles a car drives. But also, because I charge at home, a surcharge of tax on my my meter would probably not work out well. So I think there's lots of different ways we can look at that, and I think with the bills that we have to consider today that we're going to be evaluating, I think we can look at this one as being probably the most precise method of getting the appropriate mileage assigned to each car. So with that, I'll I think we have a testifier.
Thank you. Senator Carlson, looks like your testifier is Nick Hague from Fresh Energy. Nick, welcome. If you could introduce yourself.
Thank you, Senator, and members of the committee. My name is Nick Hague, and I am Senior Associate for Electric Vehicles at Fresh Energy. Fresh Energy is a more than 30-year-old nonpartisan nonprofit advocacy organization that works to advance policies that will help our state achieve an equitable carbon-neutral economy by 2050. We are speaking today against Senate File 1480. While the problem it aims to address is real, focusing only on electric vehicles misses an opportunity to address deeper issues impacting roadway funding. Electric vehicles are a critical part of achieving our state's climate goals. Despite progress in recent years, EVs still make up less than 1% of passenger vehicles in Minnesota. It should be our goal to make owning and operating an EV as easy and affordable as possible in order to accelerate the transition to this more sustainable mode of transportation. Last year, MnDOT released a report on state highway funding, noting that the increasing efficiency of gasoline vehicles has resulted in less funding from the gas tax, which exacerbates the lack of funding for the growing needs of our transportation system. However, this report also notes that EVs already pay their fair share through higher motor vehicle sales tax and TAB fees. These fees and taxes offset the lost gas tax revenue from the vehicles that EVs replace. Senate File 1480's proposal to adopt a distance-based user fee is a step in the right direction towards allocating costs more fairly than the current flat EV registration. However, we believe a comprehensive solution that includes all vehicles and fuel types is necessary to address the underlying funding issue. MnDOT is currently working with the University of Minnesota to assess how distance-based user fees could be implemented from telematics data. The results of that study may help inform future legislation that contemplates a distance-based user fee for all vehicles, regardless of the fuel type. We thank the bill author and this committee for taking on the issue of roadway funding, and we encourage the legislature to explore more equitable and holistic approaches to fund our state's transportation system while promoting sustainability. For this reason, we oppose Senate File 1480 and ask committee's members to do the same. Thank you, and I'm available for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hague. Committee members, do you have any questions? Senator Farnsworth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to make sure, Senator, that I'm understanding this. So so there's a microchip or something in your electric vehicle that records the total miles, and the deputy registrar, somebody each year, like when you go in to do your registration, they would check the miles. Is that, and if you mentioned this in your testimony, I apologize. I was daydreaming a little bit.
Senator Carlson.
Senator Farnsworth, yes, that is the intent. Electric cars record everything. So it would be an easy method to either do it on site or even approach the car with the proper sign in and get the miles off of the car's records. Yes.
Senator Farnsworth, Warren.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the bill says for miles traveled in Minnesota, does it differentiate, like if you have a Tesla, does it differentiate, or is it capable of differentiating if somebody runs over to Wisconsin to buy cheaper beer and then they come back? How do we determine whether the miles were actually in Minnesota or somewhere else?
Senator Carlson.
Yes, Senator Farnsworth, those are fairly easy programming situations where they can put borders into the records. So, yes, it would be able to do that.
Curious.
I don't know if it would do it for a Tesla.
Senator Farnsworth. I just want to go on the record as saying beer is not cheaper in Wisconsin. Okay. Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Carlson. I agree we need to increase the fee from 75 up to try and do that. I've worked on this bill a while with Senator or with Representative Wilkins and had some concern just how confusing it is. There's just so many calculations. It's really pretty, you know, again, conversion and thing like that seems pretty cumbersome to me. I think the same thing we've heard that the electric vehicles actually can tell you how much charging that's going to, how many kilowatts have been done. And I don't know if we have a bill in front of us that does it that way. And I like your Senator Johnson Stewart as well. I think we definitely need to increase it up from 75 and get it up to closer to the 214, which is the average gas tax, what people pay. So I'm open to all the ideas. This just one seems awfully cumbersome to me working with it. And you get into the data privacy and those things. But I think looking at the kilowatts, I think Senator Howe might have one that deals with just how many hours has been charged or how many kilowatts has been charged and use a fee on that seems more, you know, simpler to me. But I appreciate the bill. And again, I'm a little bit concerned about this one because of how complex it is. Thank you.
Senator Carlson, do you have a response?
Yes. Thank you, Senator Jenczyski. But, you know, there's, I guess some people would probably look at an average charge for all electric cars to be somewhat unfair as well. So I think having it miles traveled in Minnesota, and the difference between those cars that are electron hogs versus the, you know, the real light ones that don't use a lot of power, I think that's probably something that is achievable for us. I was, you know, somewhat against the vehicle miles traveled in the past because it was so intrusive into the records that you have. But I think we need to have something that maybe ignores some of that and just gets us a bill that comes with our license renewal. So I'm tending to support that.
Senator Jasinski.
And thank you, Madam Chair. And then also another thing, so the average Minnesotan pays gas tax or paying, you know, weekly or biweekly or however many times they refuel. And in this bill, it's more of an annualized charge, correct?
Senator Carlson.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I believe that it can be annualized or quarterly or with the renewal of your license tabs. Okay. So that's a matter of just how we want to
do it. Senator Jasinski.
And again, thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I think that's makes it so difficult for some people to come up with that annual fee or quarterly fee versus, you know, just paying every week, and it kind of they realize how much they're spending and they know it then and can, I'll say, more plan for it than having one big bill at the end of the year, the beginning of the year. It's easier. So it was one of my other concerns with when I looked at this bill as well. So, but thank you.
Thank you. Senator Howell.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Carlson. I guess, you know, I think the computation for part of it is fairly simple. If you take the vehicle miles traveled and multiply it out and it tracks it, you can, to me, you can stubby pencil this pretty simple. If you look at your odometer, figure out how many times you went to Wisconsin for beer or South Dakota for fireworks or whatever. But the question I have is there's a piece in here on where is it here? The adjustment, I think it's 2.29, where it says the adjustment rate multiplied by the number of days in the billing period. I'm going, what? I don't care how many miles you drove in a day. I'm just looking for the total amount. So it confuses me that that's part of the computation, and I don't know if we need to do that. I mean, I think we're more like, how many miles did you drive on the roads in Minnesota? I don't care if you drove 5 miles a day or 25 miles a day. We want to charge you for those days that you did it. And so I think it shows promise, but I don't think it's quite there yet. But that computation really throws me off.
Senator Carlson?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair, and Senator Howell. I tended to not like that as well. I don't care about how many miles you drive in a day unless there's something that is going to change the charge for Sunday and Saturday versus the week. There's a lot of things that I think need to be worked on yet in this.
Senator Howell, do you have a follow-up?
No, I'm in agreement. I think there's, you know, I like the idea we're going to charge per mile, or I actually like charging per kilowatt yet, but I'm sure we'll see something that looks like that yet today. So,
Senator Lang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I was assuming that Mr. Haag was going to probably testify on a couple of these other bills, but I don't see his name on the list, so I guess I'll take the opportunity to ask you a couple questions now. During your testimony, you talked about this is almost, I think you said, replacements for deeper issues within the transportation budget. Can you elaborate a little bit on what you consider deeper issues with the budget? You might have a good idea. I'm just curious.
Mr. Haag.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Senator. The deeper issues that we're talking about are both systemic sustainability issues in terms of climate emissions, as well as the funding gap identified by the Minnesota Department of Transportation.
Mm. Senator Lang.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I was looking for a little more details, like specific line numbers of items that us as a transportation committee are doing wrong, or possibly, you know, from your vantage point, what could you say could be improved, other than the funding gap that often, you know, that's a big topic, but I'm talking specifically.
Mr. Haag, maybe you could talk more about the study that's happening at the University of Minnesota right now. You briefly mentioned it, but a little deeper discussion might be helpful.
Thank you, Chair. That study that is going on right now is you know, as I mentioned, it's going on right now, so we don't have that much detail yet, but the idea would be, as the committee was just discussing, this telematics data, so the tracking devices that are in all vehicles, not just new electric vehicles, that can be used to employ a vehicle miles traveled or road user charge. Yeah.
Senator Lang?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And then just one more question. You said the sales tax was higher on electric vehicles. Can you elaborate on that?
Mr. Haag?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, so that is not specifically higher on electric vehicles, but since electric vehicles tend to be higher MSRP, higher priced, the sales tax revenue that is generated from their sales is higher and compensates for the lost gas tax.
Senator Lang.
I guess so. Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the question is, if you buy an $85,000 electric vehicle versus an $85,000 truck, the sales tax would be the same, correct?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I'm going for. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Mm-hmm. I have a question for Mr. Haag. So I'm curious. Again, we'll find out once the study is complete, but I am really intrigued at this idea of how we would charge per mile, like based on a base charge for everybody, and then add to it relative damage to the pavement or carbon output, or like what I know for decades we've been trying to figure out the cost of vehicles on XYZ, the environment, the pavement, the economy, the blah blah whatever, and I'm just really curious how they're going to come up with a factor to apply. Do you have any input on that? Have you been reading anything? Can you clue us in, Mr. Haag?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. This is the subject of a lot of discussion, and a lot of other states are piloting programs to, you know, fine-tune what the right level of incentive or tax to put on vehicle miles traveled is, while taking into account the administrative difficulties of doing so. And as you mentioned, the impetus for that, the reason for doing so, has to do with the relative cost of pollution that our road use does, and then also the damage to roads and the necessity for upkeep, especially with winters like Minnesota. We have a lot to do to keep up our roads, and the gap is widening. So we're exploring options, and we're happy to work with the legislature on what that could look like in the future.
Mm. Well, it confuses me. I mean, that is going to be the answer, right? Like, that's going to be hard. I mean, just when we conduct a pavement design, we know that a equivalent single axle load for a truck is 2,500 times that for a passenger vehicle. So we already know that the load impacts of heavy commercial trucks is many, many times that of a passenger car. But then we look at the diversity of the types of passenger cars and, like, you know, diesel versus gas, and I think we're going to have our work cut out for us. Is there any other testifiers? I meant to ask, and I apologize. Any other testifiers on Senate File 1480? Any other questions from the committee? All right. Well, thank you, Senator Carlson. Do you have any closing words before we move this bill?
I could make some jokes, but I have a car that, I have two cars that are gas hogs, Madam Chair, and the one of them I drive occasionally, the other one I haven't driven in almost 10 years, so they don't contribute anything significant to the Highway User Trust Fund, but they probably contribute a lot when they're driven to the damage on the roadway, so there's that we need to look at as well. And I don't even have to renew the license on one of them because it's a classic. So we need to look at all of those things, and I'm hoping that the study gives us some answers as to where we can go from here. I've been participating in the governor's Connected and Automated Vehicles project, and also I'm a member of a Plug-in America group that has given me a lot of insight in what these cars can do and what, you know, how we should be looking at their contribution to everything. Mm-hmm. And even, you know, we don't have a negative contribution to those vehicles that actually are carbon emitters. So that might be something that we may want to look at someday as well.
Yeah, well, thank you, Senator Carlson. I think this is good for us to get conversation started, as my colleague said. And with that, Senator Carlson moves that Senate File 1480 as amended do move without recommendation to the Committee on Taxes. Thank you. No. Oh, wait. Oh, sorry. Oh, take this gavel away from me. All in favor, signify by saying aye. All opposed? All right. Now I do it. Thank you, Senator Carlson. Given that I'm the chair, do we want to hand it over to Jasinski, or do we want to go to Senator Howe?
Let's go to Senator Howe. We'll
Senator Howe, do you mind going next? And then Senator Jasinski, I'll hand the gavel over to you. Or not. Okay. Senator Howe will hear Senate File 966, electric vehicle surcharge modifications, and Margaret Donahoe from Transportation Alliance has signed up to testify. All right, Senator Howe, to your bill.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Senate File 966, what it does is it raises the surcharge from $75, it just doubles it to $150. Even though, and this is quite a deal, because I think when we really looked at the cost of registration for the average gas tax paid by Minnesotans that drive a regular gas vehicle, I think that average is about $229. And so this is still a bargain, but it's a step in the right direction. It raises funds for what we can do to manage and fix the our road network. So that's what we have for a bill. It just doubles the fee from $75 to $150 to get it closer to where we are. It also establishes a surcharge on the hybrid vehicles, the all-electric motorcycles, the hybrid motorcycles. So it actually does make an effort to get everybody online and paying a reasonable fee for using our road networks that are driving hybrids and electric vehicles.
Thank you, Senator Howe. Do we have any questions from the committee before we bring up the testifiers? Senator Nelson.
I'll wait till after the testifier.
All right. Ms. Donahoe, do you want to come up? Is there any other testifiers that would like to speak to Senate File 966? Oh, I guess we have an we have another one. Have a seat, sir. All right, Ms. Donahoe, will you introduce yourself and provide your testimony?
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Margaret Donahoe. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Transportation Alliance. And I was actually planning to testify on all three bills, so I could just do that at once. And first of all, our members of the Alliance would like to thank Senators Johnson, Stewart, and Howe for their work on legislation that would increase the fee collected from electric vehicles and help fund important needs on our highway system. As you know, we are struggling with funding for our road system and need to look at every avenue possible to maintain that system. We appreciate the foresight in recognizing that the vehicle fleet will continue to change and the transportation funding system needs to adapt to this change. We strongly support the proposals to increase the current EV fee and implement fees for hybrid electric vehicles, as well as electric and hybrid motorcycles. And as you can see from this handout that hopefully you all have, most states have recognized the challenge of growing numbers of electric vehicles and the impact on fuel tax revenue, and now charge an EV fee ranging from $50 annually to $200 to $300 annually to compensate for the lack of fuel tax from these vehicles. Many states also charge a fee for the hybrid electric vehicles, ranging from $30 to $150 annually, to help approximate the revenue that would be collected from vehicles operating on gasoline or diesel fuel. In Minnesota, other alternative fuels like compressed natural gas, liquefied petroleum gas, propane, compressed natural gas, and other special fuels are all taxed at a rate that is the same or comparable to the tax on gasoline or diesel. So it only makes sense that vehicles running on electricity would also support the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund at a comparable rate. With the cost difference between new internal combustion engine vehicles and electric vehicles narrowing every year, we believe that the increase in the EV fee is warranted and will not discourage people from purchasing electric vehicles. Electric vehicles are also less expensive to maintain, and with the dedication of the sales tax on auto repair parts, this is also another way that electric vehicle use and increase in those vehicles could have an impact on transportation funding in the future. In addition to the annual registration fees, more states are considering the per kilowatt hour fee included in Senate File 2092. Kentucky, Montana, Oklahoma, Utah, and our neighboring states of Iowa and Wisconsin all charge a fee on electricity as well as the annual registration fee. Collecting fees at public charging stations is pretty straightforward and allows states to collect fees from drivers who are driving through the state and using the roads but don't live in the state and pay any other taxes and fees. Wisconsin just implemented in January a 3 cent per kilowatt hour fee at public charging stations, in addition to the $175 per year EV fee and $75 hybrid fee. So just to keep with the Wisconsin theme today, I just wanted to add that if you want to hit up Packer fans driving their electric pickup trucks on Minnesota roads, it's only fair because Viking fans that have to charge up on the way to Lambeau Field are going to pay the Wisconsin EV fee at public charging stations. So it's only fair. So we really urge you to support increasing the EV fees in the transportation budget bill this year. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Donahoe. We'll get the last testifier and then we'll open up for questions. Sir, would you introduce yourself?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. For the record, Patrick Hines at Messerly Kramer for the Alliance of Automotive Innovation. Thank you for allowing me to testify. I sent in the letter and neglected to ask to have my name put on the list. You think I would remember that after all these years? So thank you for indulging. Just one, we have a letter in the packet. It addresses all three of the proposals today, the vehicle miles traveled, the kilowatt hour charge, and Senator Howe's EV surcharge. As you listen to the conversation about these three options, it's very clear the surcharge is by far the easiest. If you increase the surcharge, it can be implemented almost immediately, and the Alliance for Automotive Innovation supports a surcharge that is fair and that reasonably approximates what you would pay if you have a gas vehicle. In our letter, we have a formula that we suggest using. You take the average annual vehicle miles traveled divided by fuel economy for new vehicles times the gas tax per gallon. If you assume $12,000 as the average annual vehicle miles traveled, 26 miles per gallon fuel economy for new vehicles, you end up at $146.77. So Senator Howe, he's a big tax and spender, so he went up to 150, and I guess we could grudgingly accept 150 as well. But it comes down to, I think, simplicity and the ability to implement it. The vehicle miles travel is very complicated. It involves a lot of data privacy concerns. Polls show consumers do not like it. There's very high negative ratings. The kilowatt hours, as Ms. Donahoe said, it's more complicated to do. If you wanted to get money in the pipeline soon, a surcharge based on a formula, I think, is the easiest way to go and would be supported by auto innovators. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hines. It's Hines, correct?
Correct.
Thank you. And members, we have a whole bunch of letters in our packet that have to deal with Senator Howe's bills and then the two bills that I'll be speaking on and Senator Carlson. So with that, I will ask if anybody has any questions for Senator Howe or the testifiers. Anybody? Senator Jasinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Howell, again, thank you for bringing this forward. I think there's definitely people want to see this increase because we do have to do this. I think I had heard the 229 was before, and then it's gone down to 214 because vehicles have become more efficient. So I've heard the average is $214. I know I pay way more than that with the vehicle that I drive and vehicles, I should say. And I think the simplest way is this, just without going through, as Mr. Hines said, this is a much simpler, we can get it enacted a lot sooner. And so it's another way. I have a couple concerns, but yeah, this would be the simplest and easiest way. And then just to Ms. Donahue's point about not having enough money in transportation, I still want to bring up the conversation about leakages and some of the way the money is being spent. So it's not so much that we have underfunded transportation, it's the priorities of how we spend that money. We've talked about leakages, we've talked about the State Patrol building being funded through trunk highway funds. There's lots of ways that we can get more money into our roads and bridges and transportation rather than raising rates. It's actually prioritizing where it's being spent. But again, thank you, Senator Howe. This is a good discussion day. There's lots of good options, and I'll comment on yours as well. I think that was another good bill. And this has been going on since I've been here. I've been here for 9 years on this committee. We've been talking about increasing the fee for, I think, all 9 of those years, and we haven't done it yet. So I hope we can get that done. And again, because I think everybody needs to pay their fair share. And again, there's always the conversation of damages on the roads versus the environment and all those things. But really, we do need, as we're seeing the gas tax go down because vehicles are more efficient and we're getting more electric vehicles, we have to address this somehow. So again, thanks, Senator Howe, for your bill.
Thank you, Senator Jasinski. Any other questions from the committee? Senator Howe, do you have any? Okay, Senator Howe, final words.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I do believe that this is the easiest way to go. I will say I think we do need to implement. I will say the piece that I'm not satisfied with going this route is because we don't collect from those Packer fans that come over here, and we don't collect from those folks that come from outstate to enjoy our environment and all of the rest of that, and we don't collect from the outstate EV drivers. And that's where your bill will come into play. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're welcome. And I'd be remiss if I didn't call out University of Iowa fans either. All right. With that, Senator Howe moves that Senate File 966 do move without recommendation to the Committee on Taxes. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? All right. Motion carries. Senator Jasinski.
Thank you.
Senator, I think we're doing 2688.
Yep, thank you. Senator Johnson Stewart, we're going to start with Senate File 2688 because it resembles the previous bill so much it makes more sense to take those in order so it's a little less confusing. So with that, Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Senator Jasinski. There's no amendment on this bill. And thank you, committee members. Thank you, Margaret Donahoe, for your testimony, and Mr. Hines. Senate File 2688 is very similar to the one we just heard from Senator Howe, except it's a little bit more taxi. It modifies the surcharge on all e-vehicles from $75 to $200 and imposes the same inflationary index increase to the surcharge as the gasoline tax. It also establishes a $100 surcharge for plug-in hybrids and imposes the same inflationary index to the surcharge as the gas tax. So it also imposes a similar $40 surcharge for all EV or electric motorcycles and $20 for plug-in motorcycles. All the revenue from this will be deposited in the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. And that's it, really. I think we have some data on, there is a fiscal note in here, but I'll let you call attention to that.
Thank you, Senator Johnson Stewart. And I believe it is in the packet, is that correct?
That's the next one.
Okay, so members, questions on this bill? Senator McEwen.
Thank you very much. I have a question about extending the EV tax to hybrid vehicles.
Mm-hmm.
We did a little research at my office, what I'm concerned about is sort of lumping in cars that are actually about comparable weight to gas cars. Toyota Prius, I think, weighs 3,000 to 3,200 pounds, but their Corolla model is only slightly lighter. It's 2,750 pounds, and their 2022 Camry weighed 3,340 pounds. I guess what I'm worried about here is, you know, sometimes people think of electric vehicles and they're thinking of these, you know, like Muskmobiles and they're luxury cars. They're not something for the everyday person. There's no way. Although we found some used ones online right now that we were sort of interested. what I'm concerned about is penalizing people, especially with the EVs, or especially with the hybrids, I meant to say, where they're good faith people trying to buy an affordable car in a responsible car, responsible to our community, to the environment, to our roads, et cetera, and then they're getting this tax levied on them that really is maybe something that maybe should be more for people who are really choosing heavier vehicles for our roads and that are taxing them more, taxing our roads more. Mm-hmm. So the tax should go where the tax belongs. So I just wondering about your reaction to that. It's something that I'm looking into right now.
Senator Johnson Stewart.
Thank you, and thank you, Senator McEwen. I think that's interesting, and I certainly acknowledge the point, absolutely. My husband and I are watching TV last night. There's now an EV Hummer for anybody who wants one of those kinds of big A cars. I won't swear, but you know, I think the days of we have to think about that as we move further into the future as to how really are we going to tax for road usage, knowing that EVs are significantly heavier, and I would say that there are quite a few very affordable EVs, like the Chrysler van was one of the very first, and it's extremely heavy. An EV, very affordable. There are quite a few very affordable EVs out there. The Leaf was one, you know, and we've seen the average price of EVs down in the high 20s now. So the reason that we included the hybrid here is to acknowledge the fact that hybrids use gas, but they use it a significantly, you know, the gas really kicks in just to get the battery charged. So the majority of the miles are driven, I know Senator Carlson could probably offer this much more technically than me, but the majority of the vehicles are driven as off the battery. And so this is plug-in hybrids, not, I drove a hybrid for a long time, and it was a gas hybrid. That is not the same. So, Senator Carlson, did I explain that correctly? We'll just stay in each one of our lanes. But, Senator McEwen, that was the idea, was to capture some of the revenue since plug-in hybrids use mostly electric charge for power, that we wanted to capture some of that lost revenue. But I certainly hear you loud and clear on the affordability and the respective damage. And what are we really charging for? The privilege to drive, the damage on our roads, the cost to the environment. And right now, I think what we're trying to do is just get something. And it's certainly a problem that we're going to have to work on more.
Thank you. Senator Carlson, did you want to update the technical side of that, or do we want to pass on that today? Okay.
Sure. Anyone? Sure. I think
Senator Carlson.
Senator Johnson Stewart is correct. There are differences in the way these automobiles are driven. My daughter has a plug-in hybrid, and she just uses the battery. You know, that's the only propulsion she uses because she doesn't drive that far to work, and she plugs it in every night. I don't think he's here, but former Commissioner Charlie Zelli bought a Volt, and I asked him when's the last time he put in gasoline. This was in December, and he said June. So they don't use very much gas.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Sir Howell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, the concern I'd have there with this new ethanol fuel, I would be a little worried about leaving that fuel in there that long. I think he should switch over and drive it on gas just a few times to freshen that fuel up every once in a while. You don't have to worry about that with electricity. Usually the battery is the battery.
Thank you. Just one comment for me. So, you know, we talked about the weight and things like that. And obviously weight, you know, we could look at a system based just on weight. We looked at one time on weight-based fees doing it as well instead of doing that because obviously the more weight. But just a comment, you know, people that want Priuses versus the new Hummer Electric, you got to look at tourism here in Minnesota. We have people pulling boats, campers, snowmobile trailers. They can't be pulled by a Prius. Yeah. And if you look at the tourism across the state of Minnesota and what I've seen, to eliminate or to try and talk against a Hummer Electric, I mean, if we want to transition to electric, we have to have vehicles that are able to tow boats and campers and snowmobiles and all those things and moving trucks and all those things. So you can go one way or another versus weight-based or mileage-based or gas or electric. There's lots of different options, but to mix the two is a little confusing is what I would say. So, Senator McEwen.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate this discussion. And but I just would note also that those people who have the $80,000, which is almost unfathomable to me, to purchase one of these very heavy vehicles, whether it's a Ford F-150 to pull their boat or their ATVs or whatever they're pulling around, or one of the fancy new high-end electrics. I mean, whichever it is, those really heavy vehicles, they also happen to be very expensive vehicles, and the people who have the ability to buy those, I believe strongly, should be the ones to also, who are, and they're putting the damage on our roads disproportionately, they should be the ones to carry that extra little burden because they can afford to do that. Thank you.
Thank you, and just another comment. So the gasoline or the fuel-based trucks are lighter than the heavy electric vehicles, and so we either have to decide one way or another because, again, if you don't want the expensive truck like we just talked about, then you have to look at a gas-based vehicle that's lighter than an electric vehicle to pull those things. So there's got to be compromise back and forth between those if you want to look at it from the weight-based size as well. So. And the dollar amounts being spent. So, Any other comments?
Well, I would just respond to Senator McEwen and Senator Jasinski. This is a really complicated problem. That's why I will look forward to what they're finding at the university and what they're doing around the world, frankly, to address this. You know, to your point, if we were to get an EV to pull our boat, and we're one of those people that own a boat and a camper, we would use a plug-in hybrid because there's no way I want to risk running out of charge with pulling a boat or pulling a camper. And so this is not, as I just want everybody to know, this is not a really easy answer. And I hope I'm here long enough to help solve the problem because I think there's so many different input variables. But this is a start, and I hear everybody's expertise is going to be helpful here. Senator Howe, were you going to say that you hope I'm not here long enough? Just teasing. All right. Well, with that, I just want to acknowledge the expertise of everyone at the table and the testifiers, and we certainly are not going to solve this problem today. But, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And you do have a testifier. I believe Ms. Donahue wants to speak on this as well. I have you on the list. Okay, covered it in the last bill. All right.
Do you have anything to add, Ms. Donahoe?
Okay.
All right.
I'm seeing her shake her head from behind. So, anyone else like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, closing comments, Senator Johnson Stewart.
No, again, Senator Howe and I are thinking much along the same lines here, and I think we will come up with something to address this issue, and it'll continue to be an evolving challenge.
Thank you. And again, I think this is one of the best bills we've seen on this. I think it's the simplest, it's the easiest to get into action right away. So I think it's a good bill. So thank you. With that, Senator Johnson Stewart moves that Senate file number 2688 do move without recommendation to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion carries. The next bill, Senate file 2092, Senator Johnson Stewart.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I do have the A1 amendment.
Senator Johnson Stewart offers the author's amendment, the A1. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion carries. Senator Johnson Stewart, to your bill.
All right, thank you. So this bill is, this is the electric vehicle charging tax, and the amendment was created due to an oversight on my part. All of the money, all of the revenue from this charging tax would also go to the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. So that was really the motivation for the amendment. And then also, given the independence of all of these bills, this bill originally repealed the $75 registration fee, and we kept that in there because we don't know what's going to happen with the rest. So basically, this bill imposes a 5 cent per kilowatt hour only on Wisconsin residents. Oh, no, wait, that's not right. On everybody, including Iowans and from all the other states. And it also makes sure that the 5 cent per kilowatt hour charge goes directly to the Highway User Distribution Fund. And then it also, it also precludes any tax on vehicle charging stations in the home. This is only for ones out in the public. That's basically what the bill is, Senator, or Mr. Chair, sorry.
Nope, no problem. Thank you, Senator John Stewart. Questions of any members? If not, seeing any, my question to you, so do we have anybody that knows of the number or the amount of hours that are charged at home versus a public charging station? I would think a large portion is probably done at home, and by doing that, then we're not collecting a fee for them for doing the same damage to the roads that everybody else is. So why are we not including, I suppose, just because the technical to try and collect that mm-hmm. and meter that is the difficult issue, is that correct?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Also attempting to meet to impose that kind of a technology on home chargers, I think would be cost prohibitive. Also, there's some privacy issues with, you know, getting, the reality, you are correct. The reality is most people charge at home. And so we are giving up the majority of the tax revenue here, but this is a kind of a copycat
to several states who are doing this to try to collect some of that missing revenue. Again, it would just be in charging stations, and there is a fiscal note on here. Maybe Ms. Boyd wants to go through that. But it does bring in, you know, a nice amount of revenue, even though we're just focusing on public charging stations.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. Ms. Boyd, would you like to go through the fiscal note, please?
Mr. Chair, yes, happily the amendment has taken care largely of the fiscal note, so I don't know that I need to go through it in particular. The one thing I'll point out is in the revenue department part of the note. If you look on page 5 of the fiscal note, there is an estimated 0.5 FTE just to administer the new tax, and that would be about $83,000 a year from the general fund. Again, that would be in the state government's budget jurisdiction, so I won't spend too much time on that. There's a DPS part of the note, which was just about MnDrive programming costs to remove the surcharge from their system, but that has been made moot by the amendment. And then in the MnDOT section of the fiscal note, there was estimated revenue loss from repealing the surcharge, which again is no longer relevant. So that's roughly the note. Although I will point out, Mr. Chair, since you raised that question, that in MnDOT section of the fiscal note, there is an estimation of, if you look on page 12 under assumptions, I think the third paragraph down under there, that there's an estimate that 80% of all EV charging is done at a private residence, and that would, like you said, be exempt from this proposed tax.
Thank you, Ms. Boyd. And do I miss, do we have the estimated amount of revenues that we would collect based on the charging? Or maybe I missed that somewhere.
Mr. Chair, again, a full revenue analysis would need to be done by the Department of Revenue and is not included in this. Okay. It will be done when it is before the tax committee. The department will get that done. But if you look on page 13, there is MnDOT has included a rough estimate that if you look at, if you look at the average, the average miles traveled per driver's license in Minnesota divided by the average miles per kilowatt hour performance times the usage rate of public chargers, that 20%, and then the 5 cent tax per kilowatt hour, roughly per driver, that would be about $47.85 per year, $47.85. Then multiply that by all the electric vehicles registered in Minnesota. It's estimated about $2.2 million per year. However, in the language of the bill, these older chargers are exempt, which are most of the chargers currently in Minnesota available for public charging. So that if you look on that last line there above the table, it says that that times the percentage of actual taxable charges under this bill would be a negligible amount of revenue captured. So.
Thank you, and that's my concern. Again, it's a great way of doing it, that, but if you're not going to collect enough information or enough revenue to offset all the costs of doing the program and all these things and putting the meters, the new meters, all that, that's why I liked the previous bill, because it was just so simple. There wasn't a huge cost at all, and it, you know. But I understand we're looking at all options, so it's great to have the discussion about all of them. Senator Howe.
Thank you, Madam Mr. Chair. Is with that tax, estimated tax that we're paying on this, who pays that?
Senator Johnson Stewart.
I believe the person who is paying for the charging time.
Senator
Howell. That would be the owner of the vehicle.
Senator Howell.
Thank you. That's the ultimate place, but the people that own the charging station collect that from them, right? So I think there's a way we could fix this, because they're paying off of a meter. That meter that's charging those that's there, they know who's getting that, they know how much, so there's no reason why we can't go back and collect that from all the existing ones, because that's capable of reprogramming those to get all that. So we should probably look at trying to go retroactive, even the ones that are existing, because that capability is there to collect that and charge, because they're just collecting it. They know how much they're giving. I think all they have to do is add that piece of the that tax, and I think we're good. So I think we could probably make this bill even better.
Thank you, Senator Howe. And I believe in the bill it says only if they're not don't have the technologies. I think most of them do in the bill, what I'm getting shown here, that if they don't have that technology, then they don't, the only reason they'd be exempt is they don't. But I think most of them do. I do manage a medical building in Faribault, and you can adjust the rate per kilowatt that you charge the customer, but then the ultimate is being paid by the property owner, whoever has the chargers there. Mm-hmm. So they're taking it in revenue, but they could bump their fee up to collect this. And I think all the ones out there now probably have that technology. I think to Senator Howe's point, I think they can do that. I program ours in to cover our electricity could charge and not make any money. Ours is just there. But if you added that fee or that cost, I think you could just, those, they would be responsible to increase that fee to collect that and then pay that. So I think it could be done, so.
Hmm. Good idea. I'm sure we will get question about that when we go before the tax committee. So thank you, Senator Howe. Maybe you want to come with me.
Right. Members, any other questions? Seeing none, Senator Johnson-Stewart, closing comments.
No, I think all of this is just one step forward at a time, and we'll try to figure it out as we go, but I would appreciate your support to go before the tax committee, please.
Okay, thank you. Then Senator Johnson-Stewart moves that Senate File 2092 as amended do move without recommendations to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Senator Johnson-Stewart.
Thank you. Thank you, committee members.
And while you're coming up, we'll have MnDOT come up for the next presentation, our last item on the agenda today. And I'll give the gavel back to Senator. Oh, never mind. We'll just keep it here.
Thank you,
though. You're welcome. All right, next one is electric vehicle infrastructure program update. I believe Miss Amber Dahlman is testifying, so go ahead, state your name, who you represent for the record, and continue with your testimony or your presentation.
Okay, let's see. Oops. All right. Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Amber Dahlman. I am the Office Director of the Sustainability and Public Health at the Minnesota Department of
Transportation. Can you please speak a little closer and the mic and pull it closer?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Okay. And all this discussion about electric vehicles, today I'm going to share with you an update on the Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program. So this gives you an overview of some of the things I'm going to touch on, giving some context of why we're talking about electric vehicles and where we're at with our planning process, some of the grants that we've done, some updates from the federal level, and then what we're learning from our statewide planning. So many of you know that we have state statutes related to decreasing greenhouse gas emissions to reach net zero by 2050. From 2005 levels, and the Minnesota Department of Transportation also has within our statewide multimodal transportation plan electric vehicle goals. We have targets related to new and registered vehicles, which has been a part of your discussion this afternoon. Then in 2023, we adopted a carbon reduction strategy and had identified electrification as one of the strategies within that planning process and activities to go along with it. So some of the things that we have been doing around the National Electric Vehicle Infrastructure Program is submitting annual electric vehicle plans, which was approved by the Federal Highway Administration. And when we submitted our last plan in and had it approved in August, we had nominated I-90 as an alternative fuel corridor, along with I-35 and I-94. And we had also provided some updates about our request for proposals, which we have had two so far. The first one being from December of 2023 through April of 2024. And then our second one closing this past January of 2025 and opening in October of 2024, which I will share a little bit more of. Just some things to share related to the conversation earlier that about 20% of that charging happens outside of the home, and these alternative fuel corridors will provide a key part of the network and infrastructure for people traveling longer distances, perhaps also hauling trailers or boats to places throughout our state. So these alternative fuel corridors are going to be providing some of that longer range reliability and consistency in our electric vehicle charging infrastructure. So just to give you an update of where we're at with the funding, in our first round, we funded and have contracted for 12 locations along Interstate 94 and 35. We have those contracts in place and are currently anticipating that construction will begin this spring, which means that we would look to have these projects up and running by the fall. And some of the things, the work that has been currently happening is we know that the construction will take about a month, and then we'll have some inspections that we need to do to ensure that they're meeting the rules and regulations, and then that they're operational to the public. With our second round of funding, we had requested for proposals through January, and we have recently completed scoring of those proposals. We're planning on making some conditional award announcements in the coming weeks here in the month of April. And for both of these, you can see the amounts that we have identified for overall funding. So in the first round, the total funding of those projects and those locations was just under $10 million. And in the second round, we're looking at about $13 million for funding those additional charging stations, which we had a request for proposal for 14, and we have one location where we didn't receive applications for. Okay. So we have heard from Federal Highway Administration in February to pause some of the work related to the electric vehicle infrastructure program. And what you can see here is that they've rescinded the NEVIA formula program guidance, and FHWA is in the process of updating this program guidance. As it relates to updating there, and they had suggested that the guidance would be coming spring, summer, and then would be open for a public comment period. And then at that time, they would look at whatever the guidance was, we would look to follow that guidance as a state. FHWA had stated in this memo that there would not be new obligations until updated guidance. So for those first two rounds that I shared with you, we do have obligated project locations, and that the reimbursement of those existing obligations would continue to be allowed from our federal highway partners. Some of the impacts for MnDOT from this federal direction is that some of you may know that MnDOT was expected to program $68 million in federal funds for electric vehicle infrastructure, and that we have obligated about $10.4 million in federal funds for electric vehicle infrastructure. What this means is that we currently have just over $57.6 million in unprogrammed federal funds for electric vehicle infrastructure. And that as an agency, we intend to continue to build out the alternative fuel corridors of 35, 90, and 94 that have been planned with 24 charging locations. So some of the other work that we've been doing around needs for electric vehicle infrastructure statewide are some statewide planning in terms of gaps and where there should be priorities. In this process, you can see that we're currently in the draft phase and are hoping to finalize this plan and our priorities in the spring of 2025. So by May, June, we'll be having this finalized information. But we have been going out statewide and hearing from people throughout the state about where they would like to see charging and what it looks like for them. Not surprising to some of your discussion, people are interested in making sure that they can have long-range travel and that it's reliable for them. So what we've identified, in addition to those alternative fuel corridors, is a need for approximately 83 locations throughout the state for people to have reliable EV charging. And what this also looks like is, a location may have more than one port, and so there's a range of the type of investment we might look to make or the cost of this type of infrastructure. So at those locations, there could be anywhere from 2 to 4 ports, and that may range on the context of that particular location. So how many cars might be traveling through a particular location, or how many people may be in a particular area or the corridor itself.
Excuse me, Senator Jasinski.
Senator Johnson-Stewart.
I would just like to, I just have a quick interruption, and thank you,
go ahead.
Grace. So is that true that it costs $1,100 per kilowatt to install 150 kilowatt port? That's $165,000 a port.
or what is the cost of $1,100 per kilowatt? What does that mean?
So right now, when we're building out our alternative fuel corridors, each location has four ports, and based on the locations themselves, the actual, roughly the cost of constructing is around $1 million.
Okay, thank you. I guess so you're saying yes, that's really the cost. Thank you for letting me interrupt.
You bet. Thank you. Continue, Ms. Dolman.
Yep, and so so you can see here this kind of runs through the estimates that we have related to the cost for those ports, as well as a range of cost depending on how many ports may be at a particular location. So you can see that beyond those interstate corridors of 35, 90, and 94, we are identifying gaps throughout the state in terms of electric vehicle charging infrastructure needs. And that actually concludes my portion of where we're at with the electric vehicle infrastructure updates.
Thank you, Ms. Dolman. So I have a question, and we brought this up before when we were looking at a charging station. So are we working with the private businesses as public-private partnerships to do this? Again, you know, my concern is we already have Quick Trips and Casey's and all these stations out there. Obviously, if someone's going to stop to charge, they might want to get a soda or go to the restroom and all those things. So how is the work being done with the private industry to work with them to allow them to bring power into their places to allow for this?
Right. Thank you, Chair. These are public-private partnerships, and many of the locations that we funded in the previous round are at some of those specific convenience stores and gas stations that you've mentioned. So we are coordinating and working with them, and our scoring criteria also looks at what types of amenities or conveniences someone stopping to charge may be interested in while they're waiting for their vehicle.
Thank you. And just my comment, I hope we continue to do that because I think that's very important. A lot of these people have made large infrastructure investments already, water sewer connections for bathrooms and all those things. So to work with them to allow that so that they can continue on that versus taking them away from those places and putting them along somewhere else, and it just makes a lot of sense to me. So members, other comments? Seeing none? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that being the end of our agenda today, any other announcements we need to give out or anything? Oh, we'll be meeting on Friday at 3 p.m. our normal time on Friday in this room. I think Senator Latz has a bill up that would like to be heard. So I think there's also, you can do it remotely. There'll be a link sent out as always is. So that will be on Friday in this room at 3 p.m. That's all the announcement I have. With that, we are adjourned.